Welcome to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Dr. Kate Staveley, a GP and a lead for women's health at Somerset ICB. And I'm joined by a friend and colleague,
Dr. Peter Bagshaw, GP and NHS Somerset clinical lead for mental health.
And today we are talking about how to prevent urinary tract infections. And we are joined by Lisa. Lisa, could you introduce yourself, please? And tell us a little bit about why you're here.
Hello, my name's Lisa Eastmead-Hall. I'm the quality lead for infection prevention management at Somerset ICB. And I'm here to share some of the great work that we've been doing across Somerset to reduce UTIs across the system.
So UTI, by UTI, do you mean urinary tract infections?
Yes, I do. Sorry, I've gone straight.
No, that's all right. Why do we want to prevent urinary tract infections?
Well, when I came into post, which was a couple of years ago, one of the things that was highlighted, you know, sort of 21, 22, is that Somerset had the third highest rate nationally for E. coli infections. And E. coli is an organism that is related significantly to urinary tract infections. And when we started doing a bit of a deep dive, into the data, we were able to identify that we had, out of 821 urinary tract infections that were identified, 470 of those progressed into a bloodstream infection, which is blood poisoning. And that means that people need to be admitted to hospital because they need those, you know, IV antibiotics, and they're quite sick. So it's also known as urosepsis as well.
I was going to say, is that what we tend to call sepsis? So that's a nasty infection.
Yes.
And as well as being a nasty infection and potentially life-threatening, actually, it can also have serious effects, particularly, say, in older people, where they can get delirium, it can make their memory worse. If they have existing memory problems, then sometimes they'll never quite get back the same mental function that they had before their infection. So it's a really important area, isn't it? And I think a lot of people sometimes don't understand what a serious condition urinary tract infection can be.
And I think in young people, we're used to a bit of cystitis and nobody's that bothered. But the other area we've got to watch out for is elderly people who get urinary tract infections and then they have falls, which can have very unpleasant consequences or other problems with their health related to the urinary tract infection. So, Lisa, how can we prevent a urinary tract infection?
So, I mean, there are some simple tips and tricks that you can do to prevent UTIs. Having said that, I can't give 100% guarantee that it will, stop every urinary tract infection. But there are simple things like keeping yourself well hydrated, making sure that you are clean, down below. If you're starting to recognise those symptoms, because there will be people who have recurrent urinary tract infections. And, as soon as you recognise those symptoms, then, putting those tips of, hydration, into place to try to flush the organisms out, of your system, having a good diet, good exercise. There's a lot of things that, have a knock-on effect that don't just help with UTIs, they help with your general health, overall.
And you mentioned being clean, and I was always taught that actually soap and detergents can make UTIs more likely to happen. For instance, that things like always washing yourself, wiping yourself front to back and so on is important. Is that true or is that an old wives' tale?
No, that is true. And it is, one of the things that we do recommend, washing from front to back or wiping from front to back, when you have been to the toilet. But you also have to think about people's dexterity as well, because when you get older, you might not be able to wash, from front to back. It's quite difficult. And if you're, giving yourself your own personal hygiene and you're struggling with that, it can, can be quite difficult. So maybe things like baths and showers, et cetera, can help, maintain that personal hygiene down there. But we do recommend that things like highly scented soaps and, talcum powder, we don't recommend talcum powder, private areas. Sorry, I
didn't ask to say that. So you're discussing, is it this a problem for men and women, or is it something that tends to affect women more?
No, it is a problem, you know, for men and women. And what we found in 2022-23, that actually 70% of UTIs identified across Somerset were predominantly women. However, when you look at men nationally and regionally, it is more men that are affected. But for some reason in Somerset, it is more women.
That's interesting. And I was always taught that's because the urethra is much shorter in women, so it's easier for bugs to get up into the bladder. But something we've come to recognize more recently that, Kate, you would probably know a lot about, is that particularly after the menopause, a lot of women will get atrophic vaginitis, and that makes them more susceptible to infections. Is that something you can say a bit about?
Yes, you tend to lose the protective. So if you imagine your urethra, which is the tube that goes from your bladder to the outside world, is becomes sort of drier and more wizened, for want of a better description. And estrogen keeps it plump and healthy and prevents bacterial infection spreading up the urethra into the bladder. So we find after the menopause, when ladies have less estrogen around, they're more prone to getting urinary tract infections. But we can prevent that by re-estrogenizing that area of the body. And there are various ways you can do that, through hormone replacement therapy, but also in ladies that don't want to take hormone replacement therapy, you can use a product that's just used down below, which has got estrogen in it, which can be in the form of a cream or in the form of a pessary.
And it's important to say that that's a very safe treatment, isn't it? I know a lot of women are worried about HRT, but actually the topical estrogen can be used even in people who've had breast cancer and things like that, can't it?
Yes, very, very little of it is absorbed into the body from that area.
So Lisa, what has your focus been in terms of prevention? We talked a little bit about some of the things that make it more prone, likely to happen. What's your main advice to people?
So, my main focus is trying to keep people out of hospital, because UTIs, when they affect a certain clientele, of the population who have several comorbidities, going into hospital can put people that, at risk, and it upsets the rest of, the comorbidities that they have.
Check, when you say comorbidities, Lisa, just for the general population, what are you meaning there?
I mean, other conditions. So somebody who's got a urinary tract infection who may suffer from dementia, or they may have something like Parkinson's, or, respiratory, infection and respiratory conditions. So, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
And so your main aim in Somerset has been trying to prevent people going into hospital. How's that been working?
So as I said, back in 2021, we were the third highest for our infection rates in England. We have moved considerably down, and although we are still in the red zone, so to speak, where we are still above normal average infection rates, we're only three above that zone. So we are, seeing the work that we are doing coming to some kind, of fruition. And what will be interesting is when we get to the end of this financial year, the 31st of March, is to compare the data from 22-23 to 23-24. So we can, hopefully it will show that we have stopped people's admissions to hospital and bloodstream infections.
And where has your focus been? So how, if I were somebody living in Somerset who was prone to urinary tract infections, what difference would I have seen by the interventions that you've done?
Well, hopefully you will have seen us out and about and engaging, with the public. We've been invited along to a lot of carers focus groups and networks to talk about hydration, those simple tips that people can use with carers who are looking after somebody with dementia. We were also asked to present at the Somerset Carers Forum a couple of weeks ago. We have devised some leaflets with those tips in, because when people think about keeping themselves hydrated, they seem to think about that natural focus that I've got to drink 2 litres of water every day. doesn't necessarily have to be water. It can be something, you know, it can be smoothies, ice creams in hot weather, soups, you know, different types of fruits such as cucumbers, you know, and watermelon. They have a high, you know, water content, and that works really well. But we're finding with dementia, people that suffer from dementia, because they don't always like to drink, but they will eat, you know, sort of things as they, you know, during the day. So it's just finding those tips and tricks to get hydration into them, into other ways. We had a UTI conference back in June last year, where we got a lot of healthcare workers in the room. So it's about bringing the focus, you know, on that problem and finding out what initiatives are going on, you know, across Somerset, because people typically seem to think they have to go to the GP when they've got symptoms of UTIs, but there are other pathways in place now, such as pharmacies. And if you have, you know, if you meet a certain criteria, you can go to the pharmacist and not necessarily the GP. There's those old fashioned myths, but you have to provide a sample, they have to be dipsticked, you know, etc. We don't advise that we dipstick every single urine over a certain age, or if people have got a catheter, because of the natural, you know, bacteria that lives in the gut, in the bladder, that's not causing too many problems.
And it's worth highlighting what you just said about pharmacists, because that's a very new initiative, isn't it? That they're now going to be allowed to issue drugs that previously were only prescribable by GPs on prescription, but they'll now be able to do that. So I think that's a good thing for people to be aware of. Something else you mentioned in earlier, which interested me, which is that UTIs are actually commoner in men nationally. And I wondered, that's maybe surprising. Is that a reflection of older men getting prostate problems, even older kings getting prostate problems, and so not emptying their bladder completely, and that makes them more vulnerable to infections? Do we know if that's the reason behind that statistic?
I'd say there may be some truth to that. I don't have a statistic or, you know, some definite information that could back that up. But what we're finding is that with that sort of group, is that they tend to be men who are living alone. So maybe they haven't got the care of a good woman, you know, sort of like looking after them and, you know, making sure they eat well and they eat healthily and that they drink and they keep themselves clean.
And I certainly, when I was training hundreds of years ago, we were always taught it was women that got urinary tract infections and men very rarely got them. But I think we're seeing it more and more frequently now. So I think you're probably right, Peter. I think prostate problems have got a role to play. Going back to the hydration question, which I find quite interesting, I always find a lot of my patients are really reluctant to drink because it means they've got to go to the toilet, and particularly if they've got mobility problems. Have you got any comments on that, how to encourage them to carry on drinking?
I think maybe it's about timing when you have those drinks. So, you know, for example, if you go to bed at sort of like 11 o'clock at night, then I wouldn't recommend that you have a glass of water, you know, or a cup of tea or anything, you know, like that before you go to bed, you know, immediately, maybe sort of like an hour and a half, you know, a couple of hours beforehand. And so that your bladder's emptied, you know, before, you know, you go to bed. Yeah.
Picking up on what you said there, Kate, it's yes, it's certainly true that because of the physiology and anatomy, UTIs are less common in men. So any male with a urinary tract infection, it's probably worth saying they should go to the GP for further investigations. And of course, anybody who sees blood in their urine, although it can be due to lots of things, you need to have cancer ruled out, don't you?
Yes. Yes, and it's important not that we do take urinary tract infections seriously. Also, women who have recurrent urinary tract infections may need further investigations to see whether they have something going on inside the bladder, which may be causing a problem. So recurrent urinary tract infections, definitely need to go and see your GP to find out what's going on. Men with urinary tract infections do as well. Just thinking back to the thing about hydration, I always remember having conversations with patients who were reluctant to drink because they thought they would have to go to the toilet. it's my observation that sometimes the more you drink, the less you have an urge to go to toilet. So there's that feeling of having to go to the toilet, which is called urgency, is less if your urine is more dilute than it is if it's concentrated. And quite often, people who have a lot of problems with needing to go to the toilet frequently, their symptoms can be improved just by drinking more water. So the urine's less concentrated, and therefore they can actually hold more in their bladder. So that's rather an odd anomaly, I think, that people don't realise.
And that can actually overflow into frank urge incontinence, can't it? Where people feel desperately that they have to go, even when their bladder is only partially full. And again, usually the best way to deal with that is just by kind of crossing your legs and training yourself to hang on longer and longer. So yes, that's good advice, Kate. Can I ask both of you, particularly for younger women who will get urinary tract infections more frequently sometimes, they'll try over-the-counter powders, different things to change the pH and so on. What's your view on that? Is that worth doing before you get a prescription, or is that just not something that's worthwhile? What do you both feel?
Yeah, but I think, you know, sort of like over-the-counter prescriptions, I think you do have to be careful. But if you are showing clinical signs of an infection, which is not just that urgency and that cystitis, but, you know, a temperature and, you know, feeling unwell, then I would advise you seek medical help. But Kate will, I'm sure, back me up on that and have something further to add.
No, I completely agree with you there. I think sometimes, so many in younger women, cystitis can often clear up on its own without any difficulty. And the over-the-counter products are designed to improve the symptoms of the cystitis rather than get rid of the bacteria that are causing the cystitis. So it gives your body an opportunity to clear the infection by itself. And we've got to remember that bodies are quite good at clearing infections on their own. We don't always need antibiotics for every infection that we get. So it can be quite helpful to get those over-the-counter remedies that just make the symptoms better, mean that you can manage a whole bus journey without feeling you've got to go to the toilet and things like that.
And probably for completeness, as we're mentioning the effects at different ages, worth adding in that any children with symptoms of a urinary tract infection should always see the GP. And certainly the advice used to be, if you get two or more, that should be investigated. I don't know if that's changed, Kate.
As far as I'm aware, that's still the message, yes.
Yes. So always take it seriously in children.
Yeah.
Lisa, where's your main focus? You say you go around giving advice to people. Is it more in older people? Is that your primary focus?
No, it's anybody who wants to listen, or, you know, anybody who, you know, is experiencing problems. So with the carers network, that does tend to be, you know, mainly sort of, you know, older. We have touched base with school nurses. We had some school nurses on some workshops and, you know, at the conference. So, you know, we've given them tips, you know, and working with them, because when you are in primary school, you are encouraged to drink throughout the day. But as soon as you get to secondary school, then no, you're not allowed to drink during lessons. You're not allowed to leave those lessons, you know, to go to the toilet. And if you have children that have problems, then actually it's important that they do go to the toilet during lessons when they need to go, and that they are not, you know, holding on. And sometimes that can be down to the, you know, the school environment. You know, my daughter, I have a 16-year-old daughter, and one of the things that she would, you know, quite regularly do is that she would not go to the toilet at school, because she said that the toilets at school were not very clean. And also because of, you know, sort of like unisex toilets, which, you know, should be there available for people. But when you're sort of like 14, 15 and you're starting your menstrual cycle, you know, having to share that environment, you know, was really quite difficult. They were, you know, finding that, you know, she found that, you know, particularly difficult. So yes, we, you know, we've touched base with, you know, school nurses. We have also devised a poster, a hydration poster, which hopefully many of you will have seen across Somerset, which talked about drink up to stay hydrated. And we had a colour chart on the back, and how to get in contact with some your pharmacy or your GP for formal diagnosis, etc., you know, with QR codes of where to access information. And we put those out around GP surgeries, libraries, garden centres, you know, as many public places as we could. And hopefully, you know, a lot of people will have seen them as they have been out and about in Somerset.
It's worthwhile just going back to the basics. You're saying about it being due to E. coli and other bugs as well. But in general, these aren't infections that we're catching from someone else.
No, it's what we call a commensal organism. So, and that means that it's, an organism that's living, you know, within you, you know, in your body. But unfortunately, what's happened is it's got into the wrong place. And that's how it's developed into, an infection.
Just to go back to, I think it's a topic we covered earlier on, but I just want to revisit it. How, in an older person, how would you recognise they had a urinary tract infection?
We do get this a lot, you know, particularly with, those that live in a care home, you know, it's that change in behaviour. And they say that, you know, as soon as somebody's behaviour changes, they can feel that there is an infection, you know, brewing. It can be things like abdominal cramps, abdominal pain, going to the toilet, more often, just generally feeling uncomfortable, around that, abdominal bladder area, but also those clinical signs of infection as well. So a temperature, generally feeling unwell, looking flushed.
So we're now sort of approaching towards the end of our discussion. We've got 5 minutes left. Lisa, is there anything else that we haven't covered that you'd like us to know about?
So I think one of the things we haven't covered that we're doing, it's a piece of work that we've started this week, because we have been, we've tried to focus on all areas of the population within Somerset, is that we are working with care homes and, we've developed a bit of a quality assurance framework, a toolkit, to help them identify what, an infection looks like, particularly those with dementia, as you've behavior, and pulling together resource packs and education and awareness to prevent UTIs, because in a care home with those patients, they tend to be recurrent UTIs. It's not something that is maybe a bit of a one-off with some patients across Somerset, but helping care homes. So that's our next going forward. Yeah.
And having talked about the importance of recognizing infection and UTIs in older people, it's important probably to say that we can do it too much the other way, can't we? So a lot of care homes will dip their urine in patients without symptoms, and there's no advantage in treating those patients, is there?
No, the thing is, there are no clinical signs for infection. So, and actually, it is, identified that if you are over, I'm going to say 65 years of age, it could possibly be 75, I'm not 100% sure, but if you've got a catheter, what you're picking up is that natural bacteria, that lives in our bladder. So actually, if you're over 65, we don't recommend dipsticking and prescribing and diagnosing an infection from a dipstick. You need to look at the other signs and symptoms, and there are flow charts and algorithms that our GP practices will follow, across the system, and also the hospitals. Because if you're prescribing antibiotics based on a dipstick, there's that opens up another can of worms of possible antimicrobial, resistance.
Yeah, we don't want to open up cans of worms. That's not good for infection, is it?
I
think you've done an absolutely fantastic job in informing us, dispelling some myths and throwing light on what's often a misunderstood and poorly understood subject. So I'm delighted that you've been our guest this week. Any last words from you, Kate, or Lisa? We'll leave the last word to you.
The last words to me. So I'd say the two things would be hydration. There's plenty of research out there that shows that hydration does make a difference in preventing UTIs and hand hygiene. Peter's having a cup of tea now. I'm going to go and have one. Yeah, hand hygiene. You know, they are the two. We can't be have infection control anywhere without mentioning hand hygiene, can we?
And isn't it interesting that sometimes the most complex problems actually have some quite simple solutions that can make a lot of difference? So drink more and wash your hands is a very good message. I think the other thing I'm quite interested in is how we use antibiotics around urinary tract infections and how we don't overuse antibiotics. So hence Peter's saying don't treat dip tests that are positive when the patient is well, I think is very important for us to remember. Peter, any last points from you?
I think you've covered it brilliantly. I've learned a lot. I hope our listeners have as well. I hope they understand the importance of infections and know that UTI isn't just cystitis, that it can be very serious, and that it's preventable by simple measures. What wonderful advice to leave people with. So, no, thank you very much indeed, Lisa, for being our guest. Thank you, Kate, for being a brilliant co-host. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Go well.
You've been listening to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. The show was hosted by our team of doctors, including Dr. Andrew Tresidder, Dr. Peter Bagshaw, and Dr. Sarah Coop. The show was produced by Rob Huns Music on behalf of the NHS Somerset Integrated Care Board.